Support for Interlochen Public Radio is provided by you and by Comfort Keepers. For over 20 years, Comfort Keepers have been providing in-home care services and keeping seniors living independently in the comfort of their own home. Learn more at comfortkeepers.com.
This is the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. Coming up, Grand Traverse Bay is frozen. The significance of that, plus how scientists are looking back in time to figure out the history of ice cover on the Great Lakes. But first, a snapshot of homelessness in northern Michigan and worries about future funding. Just last week, teams of volunteers and homeless service providers fanned out across northwest Michigan, armed with flashlights, supplies, and clipboards, searching for people experiencing homelessness. They counted 25 people in our region living without shelter. We should note that number is lower than people experiencing homelessness in all its forms, from living at shelters to couch surfing. That number is closer to 260. Still, that point-in-time count that showed 25 unsheltered people is part of similar efforts across the country, and the data gathered has an impact on federal funding. Just what impact, though, is unclear, at least for the near future, because how the federal government interprets that data may soon change. IPR's Maxwell Howard explains.
Point in time, or pit night, takes place on the last Wednesday of January, which usually happens to be the coldest night of the year, says Ashley Halliday-Schmant, director of the Northwest Michigan Coalition to End Homelessness. That night wasn't the coldest, but by morning, temperatures would drop to 0 degrees.
But we go out and we count everyone experiencing homelessness, both sheltered and unsheltered. And it really gives us just a snapshot, not really a census.
Pit night is required by the Department of Housing and Urban Development to get a grasp on both the trends and depth of the U.S. homelessness problem. It also serves to measure how well local organizations are responding.
It's one of several things they're looking at. It's not the end-all, be-all, but it does help the federal government have a general understanding of how many people are out there and what the trends are regionally.
For years, that data helped guide funding towards Housing First programs. Programs which, like the name implies, focus on providing stable housing first without preconditions like sobriety or income requirements. But now, providers are expecting that funding to change. Last November, HUD released $3.9 billion in a Notice of Funding Opportunity, or NOFO, which would move funding away from Housing First models and more towards transitional housing and treatment options. Although, that change is now held up in court.
For right now, the judge ordered the HUD to go back to the original NOFO. It was essentially grading you on performance measures that we had no idea were performance measures. So it was actually reducing your ability to be competitive if you were doing what HUD asked you to do.
When that change was initially announced, the Northwest Michigan Supportive Housing Group said that they would likely close 20 of their 75 permanent supportive housing units. On top of that, in that scrapped funding opportunity, communities that continue to struggle with homelessness would get even less funding.
There was a metric in that NOFO that stated if your PIT count has increased, then you get less points and you're less competitive for funding. And this is just my opinion. It could be the administration's way of backing their anti-housing first rhetoric to say, well, communities, you know, Housing First doesn't work because you've been doing Housing First for all these years and homelessness is still increasing.
Some critics of Housing First programs say it can take anywhere from 8 to 20 permanent supportive housing units to help one chronically homeless person leave the streets. One of those critics is the Cicero Institute, a conservative think tank. They argue that homelessness is often rooted in addiction and mental illness, and that providing housing without requiring treatment or sobriety doesn't address those underlying issues. From their perspective, Housing First programs don't reduce homelessness so much as increase demand, pointing to long-term rises in homelessness nationwide.
there's a lot of things that contribute to increases in homelessness, not just the policy. It's how much, you know, it's the economy. It's the way that's going for folks. It's how much housing is available in a community and how much housing is affordable.
For the next year, Housing First style organizations will stick with what works for them. Halliday Schmant says that over 95% of the people they house maintain their housing over 12 months.
We have the evidence that Housing First works. We've housed more chronically homeless people in the past 2 years than we have ever. And those are the folks who have the most acute service needs and who have been homeless the longest.
While a new funding opportunity is expected to be released early this summer, Halliday Schmant isn't hopeful they'll return to Housing First style programs.
We'll find out, I guess, in June. I think the writing's on the wall. And I'm really interested to see what the alternative proposal from HUD looks like.
For IPR News, I'm Maxwell Howard.
Related, we should note that food bank demand is up in northern Michigan, and a huge annual food drive and fundraiser starts this weekend. The Father Fred Foundation's annual Frostbite Food Drive launches on Saturday at 10 a.m. with an event at Team Bob's Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing in Traverse City. From this weekend and beyond, donations can be dropped off at locations around northern Michigan, and we've got some details on that on our website, iprnews.org. Grand Traverse Bay is frozen over. We note that because it is the first time it has happened since 2019, and only the seventh time in the last 25 years or so. The Watershed Center Grand Traverse Bay keeps the official records, and the organization said East Bay was frozen over last weekend. West Bay followed early yesterday morning. Their determining factor there, solid ice up to Power Island. Michigan researchers, meanwhile, have gone back in time to get a picture of how ice cover on the Great Lakes has developed since the late 19th century. A new study published in the journal Scientific Data last month could help with efforts like research on fish in the winter and improving safety on the ice. Let's hear more about that from IPR Climate Solutions reporter Vivian Law.
Researchers dug into historical temperature records from weather stations around the Great Lakes, the earliest from 1897. Ice forms on the lakes when there's lots of really cold days in a row, so compiling temperature data from deeper into the past can help improve knowledge of where ice might have formed and for how long. And that can help scientists do better research in the future, especially as things shift under climate change, says study co-author Ayumi Fujisaki Minome at the University of Michigan.
You know, lake ice is really part of the system, part of our life. And we've been seeing a lot of changes, a lot of variability in the recent years, and we still have some work to do.
State fish biologists are already using the data to study declining whitefish numbers in the Great Lakes. For IPR News, I'm Vivian Law.
Finally, Jack Siegel, a retired U.S. senior diplomat and former co-chair of the International Affairs Forum at Northwestern Michigan College, has died. Siegel was 80, and his family said in an obituary that he had recently been diagnosed with cancer. After the fall of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s, Siegel and his wife, Karen Pushel, opened the first Western diplomatic mission in Central Russia. They had other postings around the world. He served as political advisor to the NATO commander in Afghanistan, and prior to all of that, did two tours of duty in Vietnam. The family retired to Traverse City, where Siegel and his wife co-chaired the International Affairs Forum, and he taught foreign policy classes at NMC. A visitation will be held tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Reynolds Jonkoff Funeral Home in Traverse City. A funeral with full military honors follows at 11. This is the Up North Lowdown.